This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
Infidels, I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
And I'm Dan Barker, your co-host for Free Thought Radio, your friendly neighborhood atheist of the airwaves. Hello to all you listeners of the podcast as the show is airing in Wisconsin. We actually broadcast originally here in Madison, Wisconsin, and also listeners to the broadcast in New York, in Michigan, in Missouri, and in Texas.
And California.
Oh, California as well.
Don't forget, right. FFRF produces the weekly Free Thought Radio, and we're a state church watchdog and a national association of freethinkers. We work to keep religion out of government and also to encourage people to use reason in judging religion and informing their opinion about religion, and our members are personally free from religion.
So we're a state church watchdog. Is that why you hired somebody named Barker to work at the foundation? Today we have a real treat. We're going to hear a heroine of free thought, international heroine of free thought, Ayaan Hirsi Ali. Most of you listeners know about her. Her amazing book, Infidel, and her follow-up book called Nomad. She's the Somali woman who escaped Islam. She became a member of the Dutch parliament, is now an outspoken atheist. We're going to hear her 2010 speech that she gave at the Freedom From Religion Foundation's convention here in Madison, Wisconsin.
And where she got the Emperor Has No Clothes Award that's reserved for public figures who make known their dissent from religion. And speaking of conventions, I'm going to put out an FFRF National Convention alert, reminder that FFRF's 35th annual convention is coming up quickly at the end of September here in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Concourse Hotel the last weekend in September. And you can sign up just for Friday night if you want to hear Emperor Has No Clothes Awardee for 2013, Dan Savage, whom we interviewed last week on Free Thought Radio, and Julia Sweeney and Jill Sobule, and have cake, $25 only for Friday night. You can even just attend Saturday at 11 if you want to hear mystery writer Sarah Paretsky, her Free Thought Heroine Award, and get an advance copy of the new V.R. Warshawski book that's not available on Amazon.com until October 22nd, but will be available at our convention. Or you can attend the whole thing, and you can meet and hear Supreme Court victors, youth activists, Juan Mendez, who's one of the only out legislators in the country as an atheist, Jamila Bey, and other speakers, Shelley Siegel's entertainers. So that's information is all up at FFRF.org. Look for the convention and events link at our homepage and sign up now so you won't be disappointed.
Today is September the 14th, 2013. September the 12th was the birthday of H.L. Mencken. September the 12th, 1880, H.L. Mencken, America's most prominent journalist, was born in Baltimore. His father was an agnostic, but his Lutheran mother sent H.L. Mencken to Sunday school, which he later defined as a prison in which children do penance for the evil conscience of their parents.
That's one of my favorite quotes by Henry Louis Mencken.
He was that well-known cigar-chomping, iconoclastic journalist. Worked most of his life at the Baltimore Sun. He had a trademark column called The Freelance. He wrote 28 books, including Prejudices, In Defense of Women, Treatise of the Gods, and an autobiographical trilogy. The sardonic critic of what he called the bourgeoisie, he also coined the term Bubus Americanus. He was famed for his coverage of the Scopes trial in Dayton, Tennessee in 1925. One of his other famous epigrams is, faith may be defined briefly as an illogical belief in the occurrence of the improbable.
And now this quote, I think, is my mother's favorite Mencken quote. No one in this world, so far as I know, has ever lost money by underestimating the intelligence of the great masses of the plain people.
He was hard on Americans. His definition of Puritanism has become a classic. Puritanism, the haunting fear that someone, somewhere, may be happy.
Theology, an effort to explain the unknowable by putting it into terms of the not worth knowing.
Well, we just discovered something fascinating. H.L. Mencken hated the microphone. He didn't like radio or television. He was a print journalist. But in June 1948, when Mencken was about, almost 68, a younger journalist friend of his named Donald Kirkley recorded an interview with Mencken, which is the only extant recording of his voice that anyone knows about. So he had to be coaxed into this interview by his friend. He talks for a long time about newspapers and sports and the city of Baltimore, but he does state very plainly that he was an agnostic.
You are still an agnostic. You held very faithfully to that.
Yeah. I was born an agnostic. My father was one ahead of me and his father ahead of him. So agnosticism is nothing new to me.
And just like the crank mail that we receive at Freedom From Religion Foundation in our newspaper Free Thought Today, Mencken's Monday column in the Baltimore Sun generated a lot of letters to the editor.
The volume of mail that comes in to a magazine or a newspaper or a radio station is no index of anything, except that you happen to attract a lot of idiots, because most people that write letters to newspapers are fools. The intelligent people seldom do it. They do it sometimes, but not often. I used to, in my days running a column, I welcomed the letters that came in, and in fact edited them. I was in charge of the letter column and always let anybody that denounced me violently get in, because it was, I believe that people like to read abuse. And I didn't care what they said to me. I was much too vain to care what such idiots believed about me. In fact, I'd have been ashamed if they praised me. And so letters praising me very seldom got in that column.
Mencken was at the famous 1925 Scopes trial with Clarence Darrow and William Jennings Bryan.
I remember, for instance, the Scopes trial.
Oh.
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, it was a lot of fun.
With an overtone of tragedy, don't you think?
Yes, it was a dreadful thing to think of presumably civilized people falling into such a slough. And it was a dreadful thing to look at a man like Bryan, a man with his opportunities in the world, to see what he had come to intellectually in his old age. It was a tragedy in a way, but I should add at once, it wasn't a tragedy to me. I wasn't suffering anything, I was enjoying it. I enjoyed it tremendously.
Now, who would not enjoy that remark, that famous remark of Bryan? You remember?
What's that?
When he said that man is not a mammal?
Yeah. Well, I see nothing remarkable about that, because that is the belief of a very large section of the American people. If they're actually Christians, they can't believe that man's a mammal. Personally, I believe he is. But I have no particular horror of the man who believes it isn't. He seems to me a amiably comic character, just like a man who believes that if you put a horsehair in a bottle of water, it'll turn into a snake.
That was H.L. Mencken. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. This is Free Thought Radio. Stay tuned for Ayaan Hirsi Ali.
Ask for a sample issue of Free Thought today and find out more about the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. And as promised, we are now going to hear part of a very moving speech by Ayaan Hirsi Ali author of Infidel and Nomad, who left the Muslim religion, who has such a brave story. And this is a speech that she gave in accepting the Freedom From Religion Foundation's Emperor Has No Clothes Award in 2010.
But I'm really, really honored, really privileged to be here to get this award and to say that a little girl who was born in Somalia, standing before you, speaking to you in the English language, found my way through the darkness of what it means to grow up in a religion, in a tribal context, and in all kinds of superstitions, to be somehow rescued from all that puts me in a position that I continuously have to pinch myself. And it gives me confidence. It gives me hope in the fact that human reason, even when it's most unlikely, human reason is going to prevail over all those superstitions. And I think that this audience is familiar with superstition. You're familiar with religions in general and monotheistic religions in particular. The difference between monotheistic and polytheistic religions is monotheistic religions have gods that are extremely jealous and just, they can't stand other gods. Which, by definition, makes them unpluralistic. My mother lives in fear and terror. Every time I speak to her on the phone, she says to me, "But are you not afraid that you're going to be burned?" And I tell her, "But Mom, when I die, I'm going to rot." And I got the quote from Bertrand Russell. When you read his essay on Why I'm Not a Christian, he wrote it a long time ago, and you think, oh, that's all past us. And then you say those words, "When I die, I'm going to rot." And before you know, anybody who's my mother, anybody I speak to, they just go off. They go shrieking and squealing and screaming. And you think, what do you think is going to happen? I just love the name of this award. The Emperor's New Clothes. So obviously what I did was go and read the fairy tale. Hans Christian Andersen, a Danish man. Now think of the Danish cartoons. They have something there in the water, don't they? Talk of superstition. The quote, "The swindlers are trying the new clothes on the emperor. And they say, 'Does it please your majesty now to graciously undress that we may assist your majesty in putting on the new suit before the large looking glass?' The emperor undressed. And the swindlers pretended to put the new suit upon him, one piece after another. And the emperor looked at himself in the glass from every side. 'How well they look, how well they fit,' said all, not only him, but everybody who's looking on. 'What beautiful garments, what fine colors. That is a magnificent suit. What does it say to you about the majesty and the looking glass? And the swindlers, I mean, you can blame the swindlers all you like, but the emperor wanted to be swindled. The group wanted to be swindled. Now, what I want to say is being human is to want to be swindled. You want to believe in this nonsense. You want to believe that you are not unpardonably stupid. You want to believe that you're fit for office. These are the two arguments. These are the two arguments that the emperors the swindlers used on when they came to this kingdom, according to Hans Andersen, they said, if you do not see the clothes that we are making, you are unpardonably stupid. Or you are unfit for office. Voila. Now, I'm human. There were times when I did make the same commitments from childhood onwards. And what was it? Who were the swindlers? Well, swindler set number one were my parents and my Quran teachers. And the first thing that I was taught about is Allah. Allah, God. He's just this amazing, amazing, amazing superhuman being. And if you want to understand who Allah is, just Google his 99 names or his qualities. Now, those are, I just used to recite them as a child. That's what I was taught. I was taught by my own parents and by my teachers as a child, the people I trust the most, that Allah, this figure that I hadn't seen, they didn't see him, nobody saw him, was the beneficent, the merciful, the sovereign, the Lord, the holy, the source of peace, the guardian of faith, the protector, the mighty, the compeller, the majestic, the creator, the evolver, the fashioner, the forgiver, the one who subdues, the one who bestows, the provider, the opener, the all-knowing, the judge, the all-hearing, the all-seeing. I was completely steeped in that particular form of irrationality. And after I've been told, so we have this God, he can do all these things, and he has got the greatest judgment of all, then the revelation begins, and the revelation is, Allah picks this man who can't read or write, and he sends an angel, another invisible being, to bully him in some cave, hiding from the heat, trying to get some space, and God sends this invisible creature. And he tells him, read, read. I said, read. Muhammad says, but I can't read. The angel pulls him by the collar and demands again, read. But I can't. But you must read, read, read. The angel thunders and he clasps him, embracing him in a death grip. Great God, isn't he? What shall I read, says Muhammad, desperately. It really makes me think of Spamalot. He says, and this is the opening chapter of the Quran. Read in the name of thy Lord who created man from a clot. Read, and your Lord is the most gracious who taught with the pen. When? Taught man what he didn't know. That's how the Quran opens. Now, as a child at that point, I want to ask my teacher. At that point, it's my father. We are in Mecca. And I want to say, but father, why didn't he just make him read? Why did he need an angel? Why did he need to terrify him? But I don't ask the question. Now, between then and now, I still haven't come around to, he was made to read, but did he write? The second concept in my childhood that fascinated me, continues to fascinate me up to this time, is the concept of submission. Now, think of a God with all of these qualities. He can make you do anything, and yet he demands complete and full and utter submission from those beings that he created. Why doesn't he just create submission in you? I never played with toys, but when I came to Holland, I saw some little rich girls, and they had toy houses, and they had Barbies and whatever went with it. And these little girls were doing to the toys whatever they thought, and they said, you sit here, and you stand here, and this is the kitchen. I'm the mother, and listen. And those little girls, in some ways, if you compare what they do and say, and what's in the Quran, you might end up thinking they were actually much smarter than Allah. Because now here he is creating all these beings that he can control, and everything is predetermined, and he wants complete submission. And then there are all these polytheistic Arabs, very independent-minded, very free, and they're supposed to give up their gods and go along with him. Question, why didn't he just make them go along?
And we will continue with the rest of Ayaan Hirsi Ali's speech at the 2010 Convention of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. After the break, I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor, and stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and we have more of Ayaan Hirsi Ali's acceptance speech of FFRF's award, The Emperor Has No Clothes, reserved for public figures who make known their descent from religion.
So there we have the revelation. Then we have the concept of submission, and it's instilled in me, just submit, don't ask questions. If you ask questions, there's Satan in you. Allah created not only good beings, but he also created Satan. You have to be careful. Asking questions means you're contaminated with Satan. So I didn't. The next thing that, when I grow up and I become a teenager and a woman, that strikes me is male sexuality and male insecurity. Muhammad, before the revelation, is married to a woman who is much older than himself. He is 25 years old when he marries her. She proposes to him. She is the daughter of this noble, powerful, honorable man who's killed in battle. And she's left with all this wealth. And he works for her as a merchant. He has the reputation of being trustworthy and great. He's faithful. He's this wonderful husband. There's another fascinating detail. As you listen to the story about Muhammad and Khadija and their, you know, their great, wonderful, happy marriage, she was 40 years old, and they have 7 children. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I'm 40 years old. I don't know if I could have 7 babies from now onwards. Let's just say they miscalculated. Maybe she was 30 and he was 15. They have 3 boys and 4 girls. The 3 boys die. All 4 girls survive. That's before the revelation. Maybe that's why he has something against girls. And that brings me, obviously, to the position of women. And I picked a verse from the Quran that I thought was going to fascinate you. It fascinates me. It fascinates me also because as I learned it, I wanted to ask all kinds of questions about it that I couldn't ask. Allah says to Muhammad, after Khadija dies, he can go now have whoever he wants. And then he has his own harem. Allah tells him, O Prophet, lo, we have made lawful unto thee thy wives, unto whom thou hast paid their dowries. She can't just buy a woman. And those who thy right hand possesses, slaves. Of those who Allah has given thee as spoils of war, and the daughters of thine uncle on the father's side, and the daughters of thine aunt on the father's side, and the daughters of thine uncle on the mother's side, and the daughters of thine aunt on the mother's side. That's really very specific. There are all sorts of people who want to reform Islam, but they always are confronted with this kind of explicit specifics. And a believing woman, if she give herself unto the prophet, and the prophet desire to ask her in marriage, a privilege for thee only, not for the rest of the believers. Okay. I'm in America now since 2006, and I completely understand that political leaders have privileges. You have to see this in context, right? So what Muhammad does is, I have the privilege of having an endless number of women as long as I don't sleep with my direct sister or my daughter. But you, men who follow me, you are permitted to have four wives. Then there is the temporary marriage, and that was that point about the dowry. And only the Shias took on that. If you are a male and you want to have a wife, in those days, they were too PC to use the word sex. So they would just say, have a wife. They would draw up some contract and say, just be together. You could have a relationship for 3 nights and then break off, and you were off any kind of complications. The only thing is, in those days, they didn't need condoms or any other kind of protection. So if you want to follow that, you still have to think about protection. And these are the questions that were going on in my head. When I first learned about temporary marriages, I was a translator interpreter in the Netherlands. And throughout, I was called to tell people from Somalia, at least think of protection. But aside from that, think back to that Allah whose names I learned, the 99 supreme names. Why would he do that? If he was just and he was of great judgment, why would he do that? And why, if he allowed it to men, would he just not give it to women? I was confronted in the Netherlands as soon as I came into parliament by men wanting to change the Dutch constitution to lower the age of marriage from 18 to 15, because in Morocco, they were Moroccans, in Morocco, they were allowed to have child brides. And I said, no, but that's impossible in this country. And they wanted an exception because their religion allowed it. Yeah. What does religion say? Well, it says we follow the example of the Prophet Muhammad. And the Prophet Muhammad married a 6-year-old and consummated the marriage. That's the PC word for sex. Consummated the marriage when she was 9. Do you want to do that in Holland? If you do that, you're going to end up in jail. I'm not going to say what I said then. I'm only going to share with you an anecdote, because at some point you will think these are just all scriptures. It's true. The Quran was written in the 7th century. It belongs in a museum. But why is it that in the 21st century, in the United States of America, in superbly liberal countries, secular countries in Europe, women, not men, women are converting to Islam? The latest, most famous case is Lauren Booth, who is the sister-in-law of Tony Blair. She converted to Islam in a context where Sakine Ashtiani, this 40-year-old woman who was about to be stoned, she may not be stoned, she may be executed by being shot. In this context where gay men are visibly hanged, Ahmadinejad, the leader of Iran, came to Columbia University and declared, we don't have gays in Iran. We killed them all. And if he didn't kill them, then they're not going to come out and say that they're gays. And in that context, a privileged, middle-class, educated, rational human being who is female converts to Islam. How do you answer that?
And we will listen to the rest of Ayan Hirsi Ali's speech, accepting the Emperor Has No Clothes Award. after the break. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And this is Free Thought Radio.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we are listening to a speech by Ayaan Hirsi Ali. She's the author of Infidel and Nomad, the Somali Muslim who escaped Islam and became an atheist. This is the end of the speech that she gave, accepting the Emperor Has No Clothes Award before the Freedom From Religion Foundation convention.
I was confronted by women who said, in Holland, what you say about Islam being unkind to women is untrue. I was on campaign, talked to a Muslim woman, and she said, it's not in the Quran. And I picked up my Quran, I told her, well, here it is, chapter 4, verse 34. I showed it to her, and it says, men are the maintenance of women. And if you fear disobedience, warn them, leave them alone in their beds, beat them. And her whole demeanor changed from being aggressive and yelling to, oh, I can't believe this. I thought by showing her that, she would simply say, I didn't see this. Let me look into it more. I'll come back to you. Instead, she said, yeah, but it's only for bad women, for disobedient women. And I remember having a conversation like that with my half-sister, but my half-sister was more honest. She didn't deny that the verse was in there. And she said, Ayaan, this verse is for women like you. Which is great, because at least I know where I stand with Muhammad. Then there's rape. The rape verses were revealed by Allah, the Omniscient, at a time when Aisha, they were on a caravan, they were wandering through the desert, and she went for a bathroom stop, and she didn't come back. And there was this whole gossip about her having a lover. Maybe she had a lover, maybe she didn't. The question never gets resolved, because a revelation drops from heaven saying that if Aisha had an adulterous stop instead of a bathroom stop, there had to be 4 male witnesses who actually saw the act. That's in the Quran. And that has become the testimony for rape in Islam. How many of you men here, just put up your hands. If you're going to watch an actual rape, the 4 of you, take place, only because you know you might be called on jury duty. That's, of course, nonsense. The testimony of a woman is worth half of that of a man. So as a woman, if you're raped, you can't produce 4 witnesses who can acknowledge, 4 male witnesses who can acknowledge that they watched you being raped. Then you go to jail, and look at countries like Pakistan. 87% of women in prison in Pakistan are victims of rape because they couldn't produce 4 witnesses who actually saw the act. And I knew this before I left Islam, and I felt, and this is why the Emperor's New Clothes is so interesting, I didn't protest against it, I didn't dare do anything, because why? Because I wanted to belong. Because I didn't want to rock the boat. Chapter 14, verse 3 says, those who love the life of this world more than the hereafter, they are astray by a long distance. That's the definition of the enemy. Who loves the life of this world more? Just put up your hand if that applies to you. So you have a problem. Like me, you have a problem. Because there is no hereafter. and declaring there is no hereafter, you're going to rot, is asking for trouble. Another verse, Quran chapter 9, verse 111. Allah has purchased. He has purchased. Why does he need to purchase anything? He made us. Irrationality. Allah has purchased of the believers their persons and their goods, for theirs in return is the garden of paradise. So just for the sake of argument, let's believe we are not going to rot after we die. And you make it to heaven. What is it about that garden? And the Quran tells us, what you're going to get, Quran chapter 78, voluptuous women of equal age. Now, I'm looking at this audience. Okay. There's going to be another promise. Modest gaze with lovely eyes. I look across the room and I see lovely eyes, but no modest gaze. You look into those eyes and they look like rubies and coral. And you're going to be joined with them. There'll be maidens, chaste, restraining their glances. And those women have not been touched by man or by jinn. Jinn is a holy, is some kind of spirit. And Allah has made them virgins. Now, do you understand why I got frustrated with the Muslim paradise? There was no promise of hunks. Nothing. There were no Brad Pitts. No George Clooney, not even Christopher Hitchens. There were no men for us. Do you know what we got promised as women? We would get grapes. And we grapes! And we would get dates. Not dates, but dates. The fruit. Now let's go back to Hans Andersen, the true hero, without any effort at all, was the child who pointed to the king and who said, this is all he said, he has nothing on at all. My father's religion makes sure that at the stage of childhood, you get to say that once, but never again. It's groomed out of you, it's terrorized out of you, it's beaten out of you, it's ostracized out of you. As a child, you never get to say, but I can't see Allah, I can't. You can't. And I belong to one of those few lucky individuals in the 21st century who have said, I don't see it at all. And I thank you all for being here tonight. I thank you for giving me this award. I thank you for giving me this opportunity to say to you, I don't see it. I tried. I don't see it. And I hope that we go beyond not just pointing and saying we don't see it at all, but to, and this is a fellowship tonight here, but it's not a fellowship of believers in a super almighty God. This is a fellowship in people who recognize human reason with all its frailties. We don't claim supremacy. We are not supreme. We are not perfect. We are human. What we want for other humans is simply that recognition. And what we need to do in the 21st century, not only with Islam, but it's any kind of irrationality, be it religious, be it secular, that tries to capture human reason and make it to submit to whatever utopia of the day. That is what this fellowship is about today. And that's why I accepted this, and I'm grateful to you. You've given me that award, and I hope we can carry on. I hope this is just the beginning and that we succeed. Thank you so much.
And that is Ayaan Hirsi Ali accepting the Emperor Has No Clothes Award at the Freedom From Religion Foundation annual convention in Madison, Wisconsin.
That was in 2010, and our upcoming 35th annual convention will be taking place at the end of September, again here in Madison, Wisconsin. It's every 3 years. And we will be having other awardees for the Emperor Has No Clothes this year: Dan Savage, the sex columnist, It Gets Better, and Juan Mendez, the only out atheist legislator that we know of as an atheist in the United States.
He's in Arizona. He's an Arizona state representative.
And many other Supreme Court victors. We have Ellery Shemp, Jim McCollum. We have student activist Zach Coplin. We have Sarah Paretsky, Jamila Bey, Shelley Siegel. Sign up at FFRF.org.
And you can tell from that speech that our audiences are really excited to be in that big room full of non-believers. Thank you, Dave. Dave McCann is our producer and engineer. Thank you, Buzz Kemper, for announcing. This show is recorded in Madison, Wisconsin. And find out more about our show at FFRF.org/news/radio.
Yeah, we're on iTunes. Join us. Sign up for the September 27th, 29th convention in Madison, Wisconsin at FFRF.org or phone 1-800-335-4021. And at our website, you can ask for a sample of Free Thought Today, FFRF's newspaper. The September issue is full of bright young college students who've won our essay competition, photos of FFRF's exciting expansion, groundbreaking. Tune in next week for more Rational Radio and Blasphemous Broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.